Today's episode is sponsored by Tectonic Tourists. Do you need a van or equipment to go on tour? Tectonic Tourists has you covered. Large, reliable vans and great-sounding equipment that bands like Metz, City of Caterpillar, Page 99, Chain Cult, Soul Glow, Infant Island, Soft Kill, and many more have used to tour and play all over North America. If you have a tour coming up, go to TectonicTourists.com. Tectonic, like tectonic plates. TECTONIC, tourist.com. Hello, and welcome to Everything Remade, a podcast that I hope is about growth as much as it is about music. I'm Edie Quinn, and we have a great show lined up for you today. Before we get started, though, I'd like to remind you that we have a Patreon page at patreon.com/humanmachine, where for as little as $3, you can sign up to read comics, get music sneak peeks, and tons more. Patreon.com/humanmachine. Thanks for the support. And now, I'd like to play something for you. You're hearing Irene Jacob by Malevich, featuring my pal Josh McIntyre on guitar. It's been a while since we've had such a substantial piece of music from them, and it was well worth the wait.
Like for a lot of our generation, like when I was 12, 13 and quote unquote discovering rock music, like Linkin Park was the big band for me in my early teens. And I've met a lot of people like that. Like Hybrid Theory was the first CD I bought. I would like watch live videos of them and I was just like, you know, I want to play guitar. I want to be in a band.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm a little bit older than that. And so like I do see that a lot. Like there's a lot of people that are just a little bit younger than me that really connected with that band. And I think in hindsight, I appreciate like what they were doing and stuff. But to me, because I was already engrossed in a scene that, that in a way they were borrowing a lot of elements from that weren't, like no one in the mainstream heard like vocals with sort of screaming, you know, and stuff.
Right, that was my first exposure to it. Yeah. I was like, "Whoa, this is crazy."
So that's like where I have the, you know, like I said, in hindsight, I'm like, I appreciate what was going on there, but like at the time, the disconnect with me was like we're already doing this and people,
right?
You know, but like that's just the way it is, right? Because like no. I mean, now it's totally different because there's Bandcamp and there's YouTube algorithms. Right. And like, you know, now young people like are finding the most obscure bands in forever, you know, like all on their own, you know.
Right. I mean, for me, it was, you know, Linkin Park having singles on the radio.
Yeah.
And, you know, my older sister listened to the radio and it just something hit a nerve.
Yeah. Yeah, the point of access was totally different.
Right.
That's where I was like going with that. But
yeah.
Yeah. And so was that the first thing that you connected with was like the visceral quality of like the vocals or is it just a whole total package?
I mean, I would say it's the total package. Like, again, you're a little bit older. Like, I fully recognize now that Linkin Park came after a few years that the whole nu metal thing and the post-grunge thing. And, you know, some people are getting tired of it. But for me, they were one of the first bands, because it was around the same time when you're an early preteen teenager becoming aware, at least for me, of like Nirvana and all of these pretty popular bands that I still to this day appreciate. But mm-hmm. being able to meld like hooks with heavy riffs and, you know, emotional output that, because the other popular music, I mean, I still obviously appreciate hip hop, but it was very, very different. Like those were the two things that were going on at the time.
Yeah. Yeah. As a side note, did you listen to Gary Brent's new metal? Oh gosh, why am I blanking on the name of that? Like Gary Brent from Caroneer, like did that, album last year where it was like a tribute to all that like 90s new metal. And it was like incredible.
No, you have to send that to me.
Yeah. Yeah. Cause I'm blanking on, I'm just thinking of like Gary's other project Gone Mage. And that was not the, oh, it's Memorage.
Like
Memorage, or I'm not sure how it's supposed to be pronounced, but yeah, incredible, incredible stuff. Like does not really when I was hearing about it, when Gary was talking about it, it was a lot of like, this is new metal. And I was expecting like, this was going to be more like the other stuff that we're familiar with, but with more new metal qualities, but it's not, it goes straight for it. And it's just like, it's incredible. But anyway,
it's just doing the thing.
Yeah. It's doing the thing. And I mean, the recording quality is like impeccable, and I don't know, it just really does it. But yeah, I will send you that. And yeah, suggest, you know, anybody else that's, you know, grew up with Linkin Park and stuff to check that out as well. Was the first thing you wanted to do was get a guitar and play guitar, or?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of the most logical thing. It's easier to convince your parents to get a guitar than a, you know, drum kit.
Yeah.
My sisters, like a lot of, so I was the youngest by a good margin. My next youngest sibling is 11 years older than me. And then another one a couple of years older than her who played guitar and just taught me basic things. But, you know, okay. Older sister taking me to like the first concerts was like Korn and Tool and all of that. Like it was very much that era.
Okay, so your sister was into that stuff, like, and so she's showing you like the riffs.
Kind of, sorta. I was still very much, you know, early internet, MySpace, honestly, Wikipedia, just nerding out, going like genres and listening to all the bands that would be listed on there. Mm-hmm. But she was the one who was willing to take me to, you know, see Korn and Tool and all that, because she did appreciate that kind of stuff.
Yeah, that's awesome. Did your sister play in bands or just like...
No.
Yeah, just they, passionate about the instrument or whatever.
Yeah, it was more like just occasional guitar stuff, like just basic, but they were much more singers that would do like karaoke. Like my older sister tried out for American Idol when that was a thing.
Oh, that's wild.
You know, in the early aughts.
Mm-hmm. So once you start playing, how long is it before you sort of start trying to form your own things and or like join in bands that are happening and stuff?
Well, growing up in North Georgia, like, you know, I live in Atlanta now, but I grew up about an hour north of here, you know, very conservative. I was very much on my own listening to these bands and whatnot on the internet, whereas most of my peers in school were mostly conservative Christians who listen to country and just basically isolated in this little hole until I was 17 and kind of fumbled onto the punk scene.
Okay. How did you do that?
So another big thing about this era, a few years later when you're in high school, as you, I'm sure you know, was when metalcore was a big thing.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a lot of metalcore bands and deathcore bands playing shows. They'll do like a high school battle of the bands, and Very often they were Christian and religious and played in churches.
Yeah, that's wild.
Both Sasha and I, you know, this was our exposure, that type of thing. So just going to a basement show in rural Georgia, and there happened to be a band called Antpile playing. And again, this was when I was like 17.
Oh, okay.
And members of that band are now in Slow Fire Pistol. That's how long I've known those guys.
This is so wild, like, because, yeah, like, because Coma Regalia is, like, a bit, like, it doesn't click with me, right, that we're, right. like, literally a 14-year-old band now. So Coma Regalia started when you're talking about, because I'm like, yeah, right. Antpile, I remember them. Like, we almost, you know.
This was, like, Antpile's third show, and, yeah. like, we grew up in the same area.
Yeah. And so you just go to this show in this basement, and this is you're used to going and seeing Korn at a damn stadium or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, my early stuff, you know, 13, 14, 15 was going to what people actually call concerts, amphitheater show. My first one was Family Values 2006, so it was Korn, Deftones, Stone Sour, Flyleaf, like those type of bands. Mm-hmm. And then later on, you know, years go by, metalcore gets bigger, but I, on my own, get more into, like, underground music, actually listening to screamo. So the big thing that hit with Antpile was that I was going expecting these metalcore bands, which wasn't my thing. Like, I like the early stuff, but at that point, it's kind of getting watered down, and, you know, this band's just playing breakdowns after breakdowns. But Antpile was there, and they were this band that reminded me of Fugazi. Which, you know, totally blew my mind at the time because I didn't know anyone my age that listened to Fugazi. Mm-hmm. You know, the whole, like, post-hardcore emo, whatever. And I was wearing an ISIS shirt at the time. And Ben, who played guitar in Antpile, now plays in Slow Fire Pistol and actually played drums in my first band, was... saying it was awesome that I was wearing an ISIS shirt. That's my first time ever encountering another human being that knew who ISIS was. And I mean, that's a lot of that's just the nature of growing up in rural Georgia and, you know, having the internet. And that's how I discovered these things.
Yeah.
So it's the first time having like a tangible cultural interaction. And then from there, following them and trying to go to shows in Atlanta and whatnot.
Yeah, but like, what did you think about the whole the differences in like what you were used to going to like a stadium show versus like did that click with you that this was different and this was like
I mean the intimacy for sure and just being able to you know. Talk to people.
Yeah, yeah. Because like you're saying, like you never even knew anybody else, you know, mm-hmm. who even knew who ISIS was. So then all of a sudden you're sort of, you know, in this situation now where you really sort of found your people.
Right. It was just like, holy crap, people do exist.
Yeah, yeah.
Who know this.
Yeah.
Like it's not just some niche internet thing.
Yeah. Because, yeah, I mean, I think the opposite happens a lot, like, when you go on tour, right? Which is, like, not the opposite. It's the same thing, right? Except you're, now that you are going on tour, someone else is in the crowd the way you were in the crowd, where they just went there because... they want to see loud, heavy music. And that's sort of where you were at, right? You went there expecting like, a deathcore band and you're like, you said that wasn't really connecting with you anymore because it's like a lot of people, they're not necessarily connecting with the music in the same way. They're connecting with the loudness, the energy, the like whatever. And they still haven't found the thing that they really like, you know,
right.
and on tour, that's like my favorite thing about when you go and you play some place that like people don't hit all the time, right? Because you just show up and there's just people that have no, they don't have any exposure to what you're doing necessarily. They just were like, oh yeah, some bands are going to show up. And like, then, you know, you get your band compared to weird bands like Deftones or whatever, yeah. Which is like, I mean, I like Deftones, but like, you know, I mean, we got compared to Deftones so many times, and like Comer Regalia and Deftones, that's like night and day. Like,
it's... No, I mean, like, Deftones is still from back in the day. Like, I have a White Pony tattoo. They're like one of my favorite all-time bands. But yeah, I mean, at least for Milevich, we early on especially got labeled every subgenre. Mm-hmm. Under the umbrella, like power violence, screamo, emo violence, sludge, black mm-hmm. metal, etc. And it's just, we joke that things sound like Pink Floyd, but heavy, uh-huh. Which is almost like, when you get your parents or someone older to listen to you, like, people associate things with what they're familiar with.
Yeah. Well, and the thing is, like, I don't know that I've ever specifically had to, like, I mean, I helped release the LP, so like, I imagine mm-hmm. I threw some genre tags on there for context, but nothing that you said exactly doesn't fit either. That's the other thing, right? Because like, people will be like, power violence, and you're like, how is this power violence? Well, there's like lots of blasting, so. I guess I kind of get it.
Yeah, and I then mean, like, there's connections.
Yeah,
it's just, we
yeah.
don't really sound like, you know, crossed out or dropped in.
Right, right, for sure, for sure. It's, yeah, it's tricky. And I mean, I was listening, you know, to the new EP and stuff that you had sent me, and it's even more like, y'all have a tendency to write parts that lull people into sort of a false sense of security. Like, if that makes sense. Like, are you cognizant of that, or is that, like, is that...
I mean, you have to explain more what you mean.
Oh, well, you know, there's lots of, like, wow, this is, like, actually really pleasant, and then the hammer comes down.
I mean, we just like, you know, the sense of dynamics. Like,
yeah.
Again, like, Sasha and I are the main ones, because we talk about this a lot, but that's our thing about post-hardcore, and, like... We just saw Unwound for the second time the other day, and they're one of the greatest bands ever. It's
for sure.
Very prominent in Scream as well. It's just these dynamics, just drastic shifts. And none of us want to be in the kind of band that can be lumped into a single genre and be like, this band sounds like this other band. And people just continue down that way. Like, we want to be expansive. We want to be unique. And at the same time, have, you know, sound natural. It's not forced.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I just thought of this, but even as a teenager, like, you're familiar with Opeth, right? That progressive mm-hmm. death metal band.
Mm-hmm.
One of my favorite things was, you know, playing the Opeth CD and playing the car with my mom driving. And, you know, they had the beautiful acoustic ballad sounding, and then something goes into death metal and it's the same song.
Uh-huh.
And I just, it's funny to think about, but on a serious level, like, I've always appreciated that. Something that there's these contradictions, but they make sense.
Yeah. That's the thing. The other thing is, like, you know, I can't help but thinking how, like, what's going through your mom's head during this, you know? Like,
right.
there's these really pretty parts, and your mom's kind of like, I wish it was all like this. And then, you know, the thing comes down, and it's like, oh, here, well, okay.
At a point, your mom knows that something's going to happen.
Yeah, yeah.
She's the entire time. She can't even enjoy the pretty parts because she knows.
Just wincing, just, like, waiting for the hit.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, yeah, it's the musical equivalent of, like, it would be good if it wasn't for all that screaming, you know?
Right.
But yeah, it's, yeah, I get, it's like, I always try to do stuff like that too, but like, our songs have gotten to where it's just like, the song is like a minute and that's just it. Like, that's just right. The way it's going to be. And so, like, I'm trying to do something drastic in a minute and it just doesn't feel drastic. But
no, I mean, that's why Opeth has 10 minute songs.
Yeah.
It's difficult.
But that's the other thing is, like, I love a payoff that really, really feels like a payoff. Like, I love that. But I also love a payoff that feels like people got ripped off. Like, I love a payoff that's like, oh, there's the part that I knew was coming, kind of, but, like, I've been waiting for, and then it's over before people get to enjoy it. Like, I love that, like, you know?
And, no, for sure.
Yeah. I've had like, a comment a very long time ago where somebody was like, oh, I wish that X part lasted longer, and I was like, you could just listen to it again. And, like, that's such a...
I mean,
that's such a smart, me like, crappy way to answer that. Sometimes when you're the creator of something and you made it the way that you want to make it for a specific reason, like, that's the only way to answer, right? Like, I don't know. Yeah.
I mean, we think about that too. Like, Magruder Grind is one of my favorite examples of a band that does that. And yeah, the more grindy power violence, but it's similar, like, you know, minute 30, sometimes 3 minute songs, but they'll give you that breakdown or that riff that you just want to move to, mm-hmm. and then they move on, like, immediately. And we pull from some of that too. It's just fun. And then, I mean, you can even talk about, I'm sure we're very much on the same page on this. Other people might be offended, but when bands just play sets for too long.
Yeah.
Like, you want to do, especially if you're a newer band, 20 minutes, if people are into it, then they want more, and then they'll go and see your band again. If you play for too long, you know, people start
tuning out a little bit.
I don't want to say getting bored, but they're like, okay, I see what you're doing.
Yeah.
Like, you want to leave something to be desired.
Yeah. Yeah. It's just like, it's just like the jolt starts to wear off a little, and then it's just kind of like, what else is happening, like, in your brain or, you know, around the room or whatever. You tune out a little bit maybe, but so how's, like, how does that play into, like, what your idea of what the difference between an album and an EP is? Because, like, your EP is 16 minutes, and, like, to me, I mean, sure, that's an EP, but, like, maybe 4 more minutes and it's an LP. So, because I've always been like,
genre.
Yeah. Cause I've always been like, your LP is how long your set is. That's sort of my thought. And so our LPs usually hover around that 20 minute mark. But, like, at the same time, like, our next LP is like 35 minutes, which for us is wild. Cause, like, we've only got one other LP that's like 28 minutes, you know, like, and all the rest of them are like 20. Mm-hmm. So, like, and, you know, I don't know. But so you think it's more just like, look, this is, we acknowledge, like, we're a different thing. And so a LP is more in the traditional, like, 30 minutes, and this EP is, or is it just like based on how you feel about the unit of songs? Or,
well, specifically for this EP, it was originally going to be a 12-inch split with the band. So the idea was originally to just do, like, one side of a 12-inch. Re-recorded the songs, and the other band just moved on to different things. So we made this an EP. You know, got Roman numeral behind it. It's going to be a one-sided 12-inch thing, but for us, it was mostly a transitionary thing to find out what we want to do in between albums and kind of grow our sound. So, I mean, you've heard it. It's not out yet, but you've heard it. There are 4 songs, but they're pretty different, at least in my view.
No, I agree. I agree.
Yeah, so it's more or less an experimentation. And then, I mean, in terms of length, like, a 20-minute album, I think you have to be, you know, a pretty abrasive Ego of Violence or grindcore band. And part of the reason is because it's less dynamic. It's more of just an assault.
Yeah.
Whereas, I think at least for us, we have more things going on. And it's not to say one is better than the other, of course. Like, some of my favorite albums are those abrasive 15, 20-minute songs. But, or 15, 20-minute albums, I mean.
Yeah, or the other way around. A couple songs that are 15 minutes. Yeah, I mean, it's it's all subjective. And, like, yeah, I mean, like, I guess, like, you know, another thing is, like, I'm saying that our albums are, like, you know, 18, 20 minutes, and that's, like, 11 songs, you know? Right. So it's, like, yeah, that's the difference sometimes. But, yeah, I definitely agree that there's this does feel like, and it makes me excited to, you know, like every time that I chat with somebody on here, it's like something just came out or it's not even out. And I'm like, this makes me excited for the next thing because I know how long these things take now. Right. So I know that, you know, like you mentioned, you're like, we wanted to see how we could make this go into the next thing. And so you know, by the time this happens, I know the next thing's already underway, at least being written or whatever. So
yes, the next album we've finished writing, we're about to start demoing out, and we've already scheduled recording in August. So, like, we sat on this EP for a while. It's been a couple of years, or not longer, since we recorded it. But ideally, next year, the first half of next year, not the summer, so like the next album will drop.
Oh wow. Wow, yeah, that'll be awesome. Yeah. I was gonna, so a lot of the sort of delay was trying to figure out if the other band was gonna like still be able to do this, and then like partially just like, well, that's not gonna happen, so like how can we still make this work in time for our tour and stuff like that? Just like sort of repositioning like the material.
Yeah, I mean, that's part of it. And the other part was Sasha takes a while to do the art, but you've seen the result. It's fucking amazing.
Yeah.
But, like, someone has to be looking at art as I explained this, but if you see the three figures and if you look at the one that still has the hair, like, Sasha spent, like, 4 hours just doing the hair because that's what he does. He starts a project or a drawing or whatever, and he just keeps adding detail and detail until he just feels like he can't anymore, and that's when it's done.
Yeah, but don't do any of that level of detail, and I totally relate to, like, yeah, I will just start drawing, and then, like, the next thing I know, it is, like, I missed an appointment, or, like, next thing I know, it's, like, 6 hours later, I'm like, what happened? With me, it's a lot of like, it's not necessarily that I'm doing like the one thing, like, you know, the details or whatever. With me, it's like, I'm working out like the poses or, you know, like I'm not a natural, drafts person. Like I can't just, like, I spend a lot of time sort of in the pre, like, before I am finishing something takes me the longest, you know, just like all the pregame or whatever, you know, sketching, whatever you want to call it, you know, just the layout and stuff like that. And I don't know. I every once in a while I'll post like part of my layout and it's like, because I think it's funny how borderline embarrassing it is. Like, it's like, when does this start getting good? And I'm like, I have no idea. But yeah, it's with the detail in Sasha's work, it does not surprise me that, you know, it's like 4 hours on like one figure's hair because it's incredible. But
right. I mean, I live with him, so I can see as it comes together, and I can like go down to his workstation and see something that to a lot of people would be done. But I know Sasha, I know it's probably halfway, if not even, because once he starts adding detail, it's just, he's getting in the deep end.
Yeah.
But the final result is phenomenal.
Yeah. for sure. Yeah, so like, you've been booking this European tour for, I mean, it feels like you started asking me about stuff like 2 years ago or something. I mean, maybe that's not entirely true, but it feels like you've been booking this for a while.
The band is very, everyone works different sections of it. Like Sasha doing the art, Connor does the recording. He has a home studio and he's been recording local bands, etc. Like this EP, like the artwork of Sasha, we recorded this at Connor's studio. For Daniel, he mostly books like local shows. Like we just announced we're playing with Infinite Island soon. Like he booked that. And so I just kind of got comfortable booking most of our tours. So like the U.S. tour that's coming up, U.S. and Canada, was teamwork between mostly myself and Brian from Seath. And just, you know, DIY, working at it. And then Europe has been a big project. Just, I was planning on doing it in 2020 when our Hollow came out in 2019. But, you know,
yeah,
the pandemic happened. Mm-hmm. But I've been working on this since September, and there's still a few holes in it, but I'm feeling remotely good about it. We'll see what happens when we get there, because for us as a band, like, it's the next logical step, but for a lot of us, especially me personally, it's just I want to go overseas to Europe and play some shows.
Yeah. Now you said like next logical step, like as a band, is that like, you separated that with like, but for me personally, like, I mean, well, it's both things, right? It's like,
yeah, it's both things. Like, yeah. I told everyone, like my goal, and I think all of our goals for this band is just to be sustainable where we can tour Europe and Japan and do these fun things and travel without, you know, losing our entire bank accounts.
Yeah.
So, you know, we've toured especially the East Coast, Midwest, and like Ontario, Quebec very extensively. We need to go back out west again, but it just seems like we're ready to make that jump. And a lot of people have been telling us that we should do it, that we would do really well over there.
Yeah, I mean, from the last time that I was over there, I mean, it really felt like there was a lot of bands that were, that y'all would fit with really well. And that kind of scene was thriving over there and stuff. Yeah, I mean, you know, I don't know what's going on like that much in a lot of Europe these days, you know, like the some of the political tensions, you know, and everything is,
yeah,
is it's made it to where I am not always like, I'm not always trying to check out all kinds of stuff like I used to be. I don't know. Like, I mean, I don't know. Like, I guess I'll just go out and say it. Like, if you're not about a free Palestine, I don't want to hear your band. You know what I'm saying? So, like, I'm sure that you agree with that as well. But, like, it's just, it's made seeking out music from certain parts of Europe strange, I'd say.
Yeah, I mean, I would definitely emphasize certain parts of Europe.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Because everyone else, according to the Free Palestine compilation that we're on,
yeah,
you know, I didn't know everyone that's on it because there's like 60 bands, but the person who is helping us out in Stockholm is on it. A mm-hmm. person helping us in London is on it. Like, there is a lot of solidarity. There's just this weird dissonance with the Germans.
Yeah, yeah. We can be specific. Yeah, yeah. The dissonance is weird, and then there's people that are like specifically taking it upon themselves to like make trouble for bands that are trying to tour in Germany and stuff. And it's I don't know. It sucks. But
yeah, I mean, I'm sure we could talk for a couple hours about that, but
yeah, no, I mean, we said it, you know, the point is that, like, you know, sometimes it's like, you're like, well, I want to know more about what's going on in this area, but I'm nervous. I'm like, oh, am I going to start liking some band? And then you're going to find out that, you know, they're not about it. You're like, oh, an anti-fascist band that sides with the fascists. That's very weird.
I mean, like, we, as you know, we're very much an anti-fascist band. You know, we've raised, we've, like, sold merch and, you know, done fundraisers, especially during the summer 2020 with the George Floyd aftermath and those protests, you know, raising money to bail out protesters who were assaulted and arrested by the police. Mm-hmm. We did things for after the shooting against the Asian Americans here in Atlanta, mm-hmm. like donations towards that. And I mean, for the Germans, like, obviously it's not all of them.
Yeah.
It's just really fascinating that on like 99% of issues, we will be like, yes, in full agreement. It's just this one thing. And there's just this like cultural dissonance that is seemingly impossible to work out. But
yeah, I mean,
it is what it is.
Yeah, it is a pretty big thing in my opinion too. It is just the one thing, but it's a pretty big thing.
But it's very significant.
Yeah. So it does make like a strange, like you said, dissonance. But it's good to hear that overall that's looking good. Cause like, yeah, I mean, I guess that was when we first started chatting about it, was like before the pandemic. And so that's why I was like, it feels like you've been trying to do this for a long time. Cause in a way you have, but in a way you haven't. So I really hope that experience is great for you. Because yeah, I mean, it took me a really long time to get over there. You know, by the first time that we got over there, I was already trying to do it for like 5 years, and that didn't have anything to do with the pandemic. That was just like, cause it was hard. But I almost like totally, because of all that, I almost totally forgot about, like, you know, the U.S. thing that is literally happening.
Yes. What, the one that has been announced and everything.
Yeah. Like, is that like next month?
It's about a month from now. It's April 30th, the last day of April.
Oh, okay. Okay. Yeah. Because I just had April in my head and it's nearly May, but yeah.
It's pretty much May, but yeah.
And is your record going to be ready by then?
Yeah. So one is, we've agreed with this with Roman Numeral, the label, for a long time, that especially with the pandemic, people are more or less used to, you know, albums coming out digitally on the internet, Spotify, et cetera, before the physicals. Mm-hmm. So we agreed that it was going to come out regardless, at least online.
Uh-huh.
But at the same time, the label has apparently been owed a favor by the plant because the plant has made mistakes in the past. So they've been rushing it. We've got sent the test presses and approved those. So we're just kind of waiting for that. Yes, the records are coming, but pretty much expecting them to come on time.
Yeah. Yeah. I've been there where like, it's literally like the day before. And you get them.
Yeah.
You know, I've been there. So like, I know what that's like. I mean, it's happened more times than I can even remember, but like the biggest one that I can remember was, when Inspirato was coming out, like, and we got the vinyl and we were headed on tour, like the vinyl showed up at my house the day before we were leaving on a tour.
Amazing.
And we still had to print the B-sides. So they like showed up and we were like playing, you know, we were practicing the set, you know, and they showed up and we like, okay, we stop. And then we like printed the B-side on like 100 copies. And then we like play the set some more with all these records drying all over the room. And then like, you know, by the time it was like time to hit the hay and stuff, then we're like okay, the ink is dry. Like, we can put them in the sleeves and start packing stuff. Because, like, our first show on this tour was, like, Toronto. So we were,
oh,
like,
God.
Yeah, it was, like, an eight-hour drive. And
okay, I guess our first show is St. Louis, which is 8 hours from here. So that's roughly the same thing.
Yeah. Well, it's, like, there was this thing where we were always doing when we were on tour where it was, like, the first one was always, like, let's see, like, let's try to go as far away from here as possible, because
right.
if not, we're not going to have time to go anywhere, you know? So we would do, like, our first show would be in Texas, and it's, like, 12 hours, you know, from here to Austin, or, you know, 13 hours. And we would do all this silly stuff, and I don't know. I'm not in that game anymore. I don't think I'm trying to do that, you know?
No, I mean, generally eight hours is our limit, and I don't think we would do St. Louis if it wasn't in a different time zone, because the time zone change saves us 1 hour.
Oh, you're catching that, like...
Yeah.
Yeah.
But if it was more than that, like, generally when we're on tour, we try to do, you know, 4 5-hour drives if we can. Like, the longest drive on this tour besides St. Louis is from Toronto to Montreal.
Yeah.
And then, of course, once we hit the East Coast, everything is like bam, bam, bam right next to each other.
Yeah.
And, I mean, I could never be in a band that just, like, you've seen the jokes and the memes of just being on tour is, you know, going to gas stations and being in the van. Like, I want to have time to hang out. We go to art museums, you know, we explore, we eat food.
Yeah.
And it also saves on gas, because it's a lot easier to not lose money on tour when you're not spending a whole tank of gas every day.
Yeah. Back when we were touring the most, we did a 1 year out to the West Coast and the next year out to the East Coast thing. Like, we did that, like, sort of like every other thing for 4 years. And it was bonkers how different those experiences were. Just like going to the West Coast was like a harrowing experience every time. It was like, and now we're going from Texas to Albuquerque, or Albuquerque to like wherever. And we're like, this is like 12 hours. And then it's like 12 hours to California. And then like you're cool for a few days because you're just driving like 3 hours at a time. Or 6 hours, depending on traffic, you know, but...
No, I mean, that's the reason we've only done the West Coast once in 2019, and we're going to go back next year, but that's part of the reason we haven't done it. Like,
yeah.
For us, we don't want to, you know, fly to L.A. or whatever. Like, we want to drive, but if you do that properly, it takes about 4 weeks.
Yeah.
Which is what we did before, and that's what we'll do again, but... It's a lot more time consuming.
We always had a 17-day agreement, like, with my wife. So, like, we had 17 days to do these things, just period, right? So, like...
Which is doable, but...
Yeah, it's doable, but it puts you in that situation a couple times, you know? And it's funny because, like, you know, we... Like, 1 year, and you post the tour route, and you're, like, hard mode. And then the next year, and you're, like, easy mode. It's, like, literally, like, this right here. And, you know, and plus, like, the other thing about a couple of those 12, 13-hour drives is, like, they have to be overnight because you just like, you can't, you know, and they will be in some of the most treacherous uphill, downhill, like mountain situations that you've ever experienced in your life. Like, and you're like, just like, I don't, no one outside of this van right now knows how terrifying this feels, you know, but you're just like exhilarating at the same time, you know.
You're talking about like Utah and stuff.
Like, I mean, I'm thinking about like, I might be, you know, but I'm thinking about like some spots in like New Mexico, you know, where it's like there's a couple really like big like inclines or whatever, you know, and like,
okay, yeah,
yeah, and just like where it's just like you're you see the signs where it's like there's those places on the like there's those signs where it's like basically if you can't stop you pull off here.
You talk about the stuff like 18 wheelers and
yeah and you see all that like those incline like and the warnings about how steep the grade is, you know, and all that, and you're like,
we got that in Tennessee.
Oh yeah, I mean they'll happen every once in a while just like wherever, but like this was one particular time where we were just like, I mean, I feel like I was like with the white knuckles and every, you know, that thing where you're just like, and you have not like used the gas pedal in so long. Like you don't even, you know, you're just like either cruising or like actually almost like riding the brake. Cause you're just like going down this hill for so long. And you're just like, okay.
Right. You're in a van with all your gear and your merch. So it feels heavy.
Yeah. It's wild. Like I think, you know, I would love to do that like one more time. I would love to do like a 17 day and like out to California, but it's probably not in the cards. If I make it back out to California, probably would be a situation where, you know, we would fly out and meet up with a band and do like four shows and, you know, whatnot. But that's a whole thing. But yeah, that, I mean, I hope that you don't push it right down to the wire with your records and they show up and you get a few good nights sleep before you, you know, head out on the road. But
I'm feeling good about it. But also at the same time, just realistically, you know, for every record you sell at a show, you're probably selling like 4 or 5 shirts. So
as long as you have that part covered. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that's just the reality of it, but definitely, I mean, I'm mostly just excited to actually have it in my hands.
Yeah. It's a lot of work from over this huge period of time. And then,
right.
Like there's a part of you that like, not that you're like, okay, I'm over this, but like in a way you just can't move like forward, you know, like you need that closure or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's just, this is it. This is the finished thing.
It's real.
You know, let's just go play some songs and hopefully some people buy this thing.
Yeah, for sure. Are there any places that you haven't been that you're most excited about hitting for the first time?
We've been everywhere at least once, because that's just kind of where we're at this point. But in terms of repetitions, like, always excited for, like, Minneapolis is great. This is going to be our second time in Cleveland, Ohio, and I'm really excited about, because it's a Monday, but this Prototype DIY Collective is the name of the group that booked it, and it seems like they're doing a really good job. We're playing with Orphan. I'm pretty sure you know, like, we got the perfect lineup on a Monday night.
Yeah.
And it might go crazy. Of course, we love Canada. And then Canada just always goes off. It's always awesome. And then we're playing that festival in Providence with The World is a Beautiful Place, Frail Body, Nova Obscura. Like, it is a stacked lineup, and very, very excited for that.
Yeah, Kai put that together, right?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, she rules. that does look like a really, really awesome lineup. Is that sort of the tour closer? Are you heading back sort of from that
point? I mean, it's a whole loop. We're going to Providence, then New York, then Philly, then D.C., Richmond, Raleigh. Okay. And
so about the halfway, sort of.
Yes. It's. Yeah. I mean, it is halfway because, like I said earlier, once you hit the East Coast, all these cities are so close to each other. So you can do a whole week just between Providence and Richmond.
Yeah, for sure. I've never played Minneapolis, like, in the whole time I've been playing a band. I've always wanted to. It's always, like, if we're going to the West Coast, we got to go down first.
Right.
Down south, and then, you know, and then it's kind of, like, if you hit Denver and then you hit Omaha, then Minneapolis is kind of out of the way at that point, so that's not happened. And I've never been up to, like, Rhode Island or any of that either. I don't know.
I mean, always at least stuff to do. Just definitely don't go to Minneapolis when it's cold, because it will be negative degrees out there.
Yeah, I don't know that I'm going anywhere when it's cold anymore. I'm
true.
Like, that's I don't know. That's just like, I'm not. It's really surprising that I've lived in Indiana as long as I have for as little as I like cold weather. But certainly used to do all of our tours like in November for some reason, just because like it felt like no bands were trying to tour that much then. You know,
no, that's...
Yeah. So it was a really good time. It's like you weren't competing for like dates and whatnot, you know? But always trying to like go down to Florida in November or go out to California in November. And I mean, of course, now the weather is so unpredictable everywhere all the time. It's like hard to even say, like trying to go down to Texas in November thinking it's going to be 60 degrees yeah. and you might, you know, hit a blizzard. But
I mean, that was our experience when we first started touring again after, you know, COVID and everything, when things were happening. And like we waited a while after band started touring before we felt safe doing it. But I think it was in March and we were in Canada and it was snowing and like 10 degrees. And Canadians, that's whatever, that's their life. But mm-hmm. we're from Georgia, so we're just like, what the hell?
Yeah. 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 Well, like one of the only times I ever canceled a tour was like, it was literally like spring break for Purdue. And so that's why we were like, we booked this tour during spring break because we had some members, and we could not even get out of the city because there was the worst snowstorm in my entire living in Lafayette. We could not even get out of the city because it was just like spring break, middle of March, you know, and we got it. In like 30 minutes, we got it. What would usually it would be like, we got through like one stoplight basically in like 30 minutes because it was so wild. Like cars were just driving off the road, and we were like, "It'll be fine once we get like on the interstate or something, right?" And we'll just take it nice and slow, and there's just like, I mean, it was bonkers. We got. Like it would take you like 2 minutes to do this, and it was like 30 minutes of just like we're gonna die. And like the van that we had, it was like not even like usually when you have a van and it's like you got stuff packed in a way that's not always necessarily the safest, but it's like you got the seats there so stuff won't just come flying at you if.
Right,
you know,
it's Tetris.
And, yeah, you're doing something that's got, but this was just like, it was just like, as soon as something started sliding, then stuff was just falling over, and I was like, we were literally gonna die if we don't just like turn around and go home, and like from the time, like I mean, we made it like blocks, not even like you know, and from the time we had left to the time we got home was like an hour and 20 minutes. We were like. I cannot believe we barely made it past this gas station down the street. Just like,
no, that's insane.
Yeah, it was just like, yeah, you can't, I don't know, you can't. And that was a long time ago, but that's Lafayette. But Yeah, I don't know. I hope that y'all have a great time out there. It sounds like it's, you know, going to be a lot of fun. And say hi to Kai for me.
Oh, yeah, of course.
But yeah, you said that you have some local shows happening before the tour?
If you're familiar with Foxwound, we just last week played a memorial show for their bass player, Alan, who was very quickly diagnosed with cancer and then passed away from it.
Oh, wow.
And they've been a band in the scene for a while. Like, we've known them. Connor especially has been closer to them because they're kind of from the same area around, like, Northwest Atlanta, Marietta. But yeah, that was a good packed show, you know, good send off. And then we have Infinite Island coming up on the 12th. And always excited for them because they're one of the best bands doing it right now, and they're the homies.
Yeah.
And then tour. We try to not do shows too close together locally.
Yeah, yeah. That's the idea, you know. Is there anything else that you all have in the works that you want to talk about before we sort of start wrapping things up? Or
I mean, for us, this is largely, we spent last year, we played ZBR Fest in Chicago,
mm-hmm.
which was awesome, but we did a couple shows on the way there, played that, and just drove home, and the rest of the year was focused on writing this album. So we're very much excited to, it's going to be very busy, but do this 3-week tour. Then we kind of have the summer to keep demoing out this album, recording that in August, and then doing 4 weeks in the UK and Europe in September, October. And hopefully sometime next year, the album comes out and we just tour more.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, I didn't mean like to sound like I was rushing through things, but we really did like talk about the European tour already. Like it sounds like I was like, oh, well, it doesn't sound like you're very busy. Let's talk about something. But it's like you have this EP coming out. We've already established like you're about ready to record another LP. The mm-hmm. tour that I almost forgot about, you know, which is happening, you know, at the end of April. And then like this whole European tour, it's like, you're literally not stopping for a long time. And, that's awesome because yeah, I mean the last time that people have been, blessed with this much Malevich was, you know, in 2019. So, you know, we're hungry for it for sure. What is the official release date of the EP?
I think it's the 26th of April. So just a few days before. Because, again, we agreed with label, like, it would come out digitally, so we agreed on that. And then the vinyl process started going, and now we are pretty certain that we want to have them physically as well.
Yeah. Will there be a pre-order the same day as the drop, or is that...
Oh, the pre-orders are up now.
Oh, okay. I couldn't remember. Like, I saw, you know, there was, like, I think that y'all were doing some T-shirts and stuff like that, too. So,
so there's 500 copies been printed. There's 2 color variants. Not doing any black, because color just is better, in my opinion. The pre-orders are up. People who are in the UK and Europe, like Sludge Lord Records, who helped with the last album, is pretty much doing distro over there, so that's available. And yeah, we're just, like I said, last year we spent the time writing because we had to just take time off touring, and then hopefully once this drops and the tour starts, we're just on a roll and we just keep moving.
And that was my conversation with Josh McIntyre. Thank you so much, Josh, for taking the time to chat with me. Thanks to all y'all for listening wherever you are as well. If you got a couple minutes today, go by middlemanrecords.bandcamp.com and give something a listen. Maybe even pick up an album. Or stop by the Patreon page at patreon.com/humanmachine. We could really use the support. Until next time, take care and do good things.